One of the top complaints by gardeners this time of year is the amount of weeds now taking over their garden beds.
But have you ever stopped to think what a weed actually is, or even why it is where it is?
And what if knowing the answer to these things suddenly made weed control a lot easier? Hello, I'm Richard Chivers.
And I'm Becky Searle.
And this is The Seed Pod.
This podcast was made in association with Dalefoot Composts. Using bracken and sheep's wool from the Lakeland Fells, Dalefoot Composts create the UK's premium growing mediums that are peat-free and organic for gardeners everywhere.
So Becky, let's do something a little bit different. Let's go wild. Let's do something different to what we normally do, which is we normally talk about our favourite topics. Let's talk about our least favourite topic. Or one of our least favourite topics. Let's talk about weeds.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's that time, isn't it? It's nice and warm. We're getting sort of little bits of rain here and there. It's perfect growing conditions. It's great for vegetables, but it's great for weeds too. And they are popping up left, right and centre at the moment, aren't they?
It is. It's a gardener's dilemma in the fact that you want the conditions to be right to set your vegetation and your fruit and your crops into big forward motion. The trouble is, it's the same conditions that our friends or foes, the weeds, love as well. And unfortunately, they tend to win the battle quicker than the crops as well.
Yeah, that's right. But so before we dive into just talking about how much we hate weeds for however long, shall we try and define a weed? So I think everybody knows when they go out into their garden, that's a plant and that's a weed. And sometimes you think that's a pretty weed, I might let it stay, or I might define that as a weed even though it's actually a plant. But how do we actually define weeds?
This is a really good question because I think like you said, if you've got a purpose-built vegetable garden or an allotment, you kind of know straight away what's a weed and what's not a weed. Even if you don't know what it is, you kind of know it's a weed. And there's that cliche, which we're going to have to reference, which is, it's just a plant in the wrong place. And the wrong place is in your vegetable bed. But I've come to sort of like try to understand that there must be a group of plants that we're calling weeds, and they do have some properties that are quite similar and quite annoying when they are weeds. So how do you think we should define weeds?
Well, weeds are generally really, really good at growing, aren't they? And we've got kind of two different types of weed, I suppose. We've got the perennial weeds, the ones like bindweed and mare's tail and brambles and things like that, that just stay there and come back year upon year upon year. And then we have the annual weeds, and the annual weeds are the ones that pop up, go to seed and spread everywhere. And it all seems to happen really, really quickly. You can go to your allotment one day and there'll be no weeds, and then the next day there'll be 25 massive great big weeds all already gone to seed. And it's slightly frightening this time of year, isn't it? I mean, I think we need to first of all take a step back and really appreciate these plants for the absolute miracles that they really are.
I think you're right. And as long as I've been allotment gardening, and you know, if I just use the last 5 years on my current plot, when I became much more serious about allotment gardening, I think you have to kind of change your mindset a little bit about these plants. And for two reasons. One, they're going to grow whether you like it or not. And two, you can either pull your hair out and be stressed about
Does
it.
Does that
or
explain
you can
a few things about your hairline? I
can't believe
his face.
What? Get out. Get out. Lost my thread completely.
Sorry. You can either pull your hair out or...
or you can take the perspective that you've just pointed out and then say, actually, these are quite incredible plants. And some of them, particularly ones that have been around since the Jurassic period, for example, are really annoying, but I'm in awe of them. I'm thinking, like you said, you know, if we define a weed as something particularly that grows really, really quickly in your plot, runs to seed, or is very invasive and is perennial and it comes back every year, whether you like it or not, they're incredible plants.
They are. Now, I think we should say that weeds do occupy a certain niche, generally speaking. I'm generalizing here big time, but generally speaking, weeds are plants that feed on a certain type of nitrogen. So we know that plants need a lot of nitrogen to grow. Most plants, the plants that we like and that we generally plant out in our gardens and actually want to grow, take in a form of nitrogen called ammonium, which is readily available in soils. And weeds take in a form of nitrogen called nitrates. And nitrates are available in, I suppose, poor quality soils. Now, the reason that I'm saying poor quality soils is because there's a type of bacteria that lives in soils with a pH of above 7. And they are called nitrifying bacteria. And the nitrifying bacteria convert ammonium to nitrates. Now, all plants will take in some nitrates, but weeds, the ones that go to seed really, really quickly and grow really fast, they will feed predominantly on nitrates. And if you've got a lot of nitrifying bacteria in your soil because the pH is slightly off, and the pH is slightly off because of the lack of fungi in the soil, then you have an increased number of weeds. Which, when you understand what a weed is and how it grows fast by taking in these nitrates, which are basically like plant sweeties that make them grow really, really fast. They go hyper, basically, like when you feed your children too many jelly beans. They go really, really hyper and go to seed quickly. Then you understand just how important the soil is, and we're coming back to the soil again, but you understand that the soil actually can suppress weeds simply by being in balance.
I completely agree. I mean, this was another one of those light bulb moments that when you start understanding the soil, and you know, we talked about this in a few episodes ago, where we talked about soil and the fact that we don't use any fertilizers, and that was just one aspect of why we, you know, the importance of our soil, and not actually causing any destruction through digging or tilling or adding any fertilizers, because it has this incredible system built in that, one, as we talked about a couple of episodes, feeds the plants perfectly well, and that is the plants we want to grow, and two, like you've just said, it suppresses the plants that we don't want to grow. And so when you talk about nitrates as opposed to the form of nitrogen that our crops and our vegetables want to use in the form that's already in the soil that is provided through the soil food web and the system within the soil, if you understand that, there's another light bulb moment in that intricacy, because it goes back to the point we said about fertilizers. There's two things, again, you can do that we've already talked about, but we're going to reiterate it, which is, don't add fertilizer because the form of nitrogen you're adding is nitrates. And two, do not destroy the fungal network in the soil by digging. And through those two actions, again, we're reinforcing a benefit.
That's right, because the fungal network in the soil reduces the amount of nitrifying bacteria, which again just makes the ammonium the more prevalent form of nitrogen in the soil. And then obviously if we're not adding nitrates as well, then we're going to have that ammonium as being the more prevalent form of nitrogen. And therefore our crops and the things that we actually want to grow can grow really nicely, and they grow slower. They do it at their own pace, and we don't have these other plants, the weeds, coming in and taking all the nitrates and going yippee and doing their thing really, really fast and basically somehow managing to outcompete all of our other plants and cause a right mess.
And it is. I think, you know, we have to accept weeds are a very natural process in our soils, and in a lot of ways that's a good sign. And, you know, but as gardeners, we see them as a pain in the backside. And so we've just touched on a really important point about how we can manage weeds in our gardens, and that is, again, don't give them the wrong kind of food, i.e. don't give them anything, and don't touch your soil, and you're on to a really positive start by simply not digging your garden and not adding fertilizers. Let's talk about other aspects of when, like you said at the beginning, we are in peak growing season now, not just for our vegetables, but the weeds are now showing, and people probably will recognize this when they walk out into their gardens, onto the allotments. It's almost like overnight you will see weeds appearing. And so the biggest question on everyone's lips is, how can we manage these in an environmentally friendly way, and also in a way that is easier for us in terms of time consumed gardeners?
One word, hoe.
And I love that word. I absolutely love that word.
I mean, Richard and I are massive hoe fans, right?
Absolutely.
We have endless conversations about hoes. It's the kind of thing that Richard will call me up at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday and, can I just talk to you about this hoe?
I actually sharpened mine the other day. I was gonna share a video of me sharpening it.
No, but okay, you didn't have a video of it, but you did text me immediately after you'd done it. So
I'm sharpening my hoe.
So newsworthy. But we love hoes for a really, really good reason, and that is because they are super easy. They are a brilliant, elegant, old-fashioned way of managing weeds that works really, really well. Now, the reason it works really well, and I think possibly better than pulling weeds, first of all, is because you don't have to get down on your hands and knees. You can do hoeing from standing up, which is excellent. Second, the reason that hoeing is better is because it can really get to grips with those perennial weeds, things like bindweed and mare's tail and things like that. Now, these two take time. Don't expect to start hoeing your perennial weeds and get rid of them in a season. It doesn't work like that. But the point is that plants live under the surface. Plants like mare's tail and bindweed and things like that, they live under the surface. They can take up nutrients, but they cannot get those carbohydrates from photosynthesis until they have leaves above the surface. And if some nice gardener is taking those leaves away straight away as soon as they surface above ground, then they're not going to be able to get those carbohydrates from photosynthesis, and it's going to weaken the plant as a whole. So what we end up with is a plant that can't survive because it can't produce its own energy, it can't produce its own sugars, because we're simply not letting it. If we're pulling the whole plant out of the ground, yes, we are getting it out, but the chances are that we're going to be missing bits. If we are hoeing it and just taking those leaves off as soon as they appear, that's something that we can do really, really regularly. And we were talking about this recently, weren't we, Richard, that we just pass a hoe over the top of our beds pretty much every time we go out there, and it takes seconds. And it weakens these plants. And the other thing is the annual weeds get weakened by hoeing as well. And it is so easy. And then you can just leave them on the surface. They'll dry out. And that's that. Unless they've got seeds, you might want to remove them if they've got seeds.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I know we joke about it quite a lot about our obsession with hoes. But if... And this goes back to a previous point, is that, you know, if you are going to buy something to use in your garden, I can't recommend buying a hoe enough. it's probably the most used tool that I ever use in a garden for the points Becky's already raised. And there's some fantastic ones out there that if you look after them, they will last forever. And my main experience of a hoe is for two reasons. One, it's time. Honestly, if you've got a garden the size of an allotment and you've got your beds laid out, and as soon as the weeds start coming up, whether they're annual or perennial, it's incredibly time consuming to go around every single bed on a regular basis, because they will come up overnight and have to do all the weeding and pulling out of those weeds on your knees, bent over, whatever. And a hoe is just something that you literally can run over the top of the bed. It's not destructive of the soil, which is really important. You're literally just tickling the top of the surface more than anything. And remember that the organisms that I guess we're talking about, they're much further down, and you know, the structure's further down. You know, if you go in no dig and just adding organic matter to the top of your surface every year, you've got a wonderful top surface. In fact, a hoe will just run really freely through. Most of the time, they're the perfect size that they'll run between rows of crops. And I have mare's tail, right? And I know loads of allotment holders out there across the UK will have mare's tail. Or really, it's horse tail, but it's become common usage to use the term mare's tail. So either one, mare's tail, horse tail, for our point, people will know. If you've got it, you'll know what that is. And mare's tail as a perennial weed is really, really frustrating. And it's almost like, I remember when I first took on an allotment years and years ago. And if you went on one of the forums and told someone on one of these online forums they had mare's tail, what's the advice? People were saying things like, get another plot. And you think, God, that's just not... This, I can understand why that was coming from, but it's just not helpful and it's not useful. And you kind of just fall into this dire sort of like cycle of your mindset thinking, oh my God, I got mare's tail, it's the end of the world. But as Becky said, you choose how you fight the battle with perennial weeds. Either you can spend hours at this time of year pulling them out as far as you can on your hands and knees, or you can hoe them off. Either way, you're doing my personal view is now, from experience, that you're ending with the same solution. You're depriving them of photosynthesis in order to restore that energy and to keep coming back. And it will take a very long time to get rid of certain perennial weeds. Mare's tail, I've learned to accept I will never get rid of it off my allotment, because the entire allotment site is covered in mare's tail.
And that's so the even problem, if I, because it's under the ground everywhere, you can weaken off a little bit where you've got control over it, but it you can't weaken the whole thing, can you?
Absolutely. So it's about choosing your it's choosing how you fight your battle. And the difference in time between me going around and just hand weeding and pulling as much of the mare's tail as possible on my hands and knees, compared to going around for 15 to 20 minutes with a hoe and ending with the same position, is a no-brainer for me anymore. So as Becky said, most of the time I always have a hoe in my hand, and every time I visit the plot, I'll run the hoe across the top of the bed just to keep on top of it. And that's just, it's just such a brilliant device.
It's a nice satisfying thing to do, but I would say that if you are particularly angry for whatever reason, pulling up perennial weeds is actually quite cathartic, especially bindweed.
It really is.
Just yank that thing out. But what we particularly want to steer clear of is obviously weed killers. Now a lot of people sort of take the opinion that weed killers aren't that bad because they're only killing weeds. But we're putting chemicals into the ground through those weed killers. They are absolutely not just staying on the plant. And what most weed killers are broadleafed weed killers. So things like Roundup, you can spray on dandelions in your lawn, and dandelions are broadleaf plants, and therefore the Roundup is taken in by the broadleaf plants, kills off the broadleaf plant, but leaves the grass alone. And grass are narrowleaf plants, and therefore they don't get affected by the broadleaf weed killers. But the majority of our vegetables are broadleaf plants. And therefore, if we have broadleaf weed killer, which stays in the ground for a really, really long time, in our soil that we're trying to grow our vegetables on, just because we've gone and sprayed it at some point, then we're going to come across struggles. And if we continue to do this, we're going to have a build-up of this chemical in the soil, which is literally designed to kill the same plants that you want to grow. And just because you sprayed it on a dandelion, it doesn't mean that it won't then affect the radish that you plant there next. So it's really, really important that whatever we do, we try to avoid those chemicals.
I think the other important thing is that, we would never use chemicals in, herbicides in this case, to kill weeds. And it goes back to the point we've reiterated in terms of our principles, that you were always having an effect on the biodiversity in your garden by doing that. You know, we know there's a problem that if you just spray it over plants and weeds, and like Becky said, most of the time it's trying to hit the broadleaf, but so many plants are broadleaf plants, and we know that a significant problem with pollinators and bees particularly is the fact that they are being poisoned by these chemicals that are being sprayed on. What people, I suppose, for aesthetic reasons in their own head would think this is wasteland or wild garden, and I need to tame it by spraying it with glyphosate or something. It's having an effect on not just, like you said, the other broadleaf plants that potentially will grow in your garden, but it's having an effect on the living ecosystem, the insects, the pollinators that all interact with that that system. And we have to stop having that intervention that is causing this decline.
So, Richard, let's start with a patch of land that is completely covered in weeds. And so many people face this situation, don't they? Where they look at a patch of land, a new allotment or something like that, and go, oh my goodness, I don't even know where to start. So what would you do in this situation?
I think you're absolutely right. I think any person who takes on an allotment will pretty much be guaranteed to be facing that scenario when they take on an allotment. Knowing what I know now and using the experience I've managed to gain, I think the first thing, I wouldn't be daunted by it. And the second thing is, you want to basically cut all the growth down to ground level. So your brambles, any overgrown grasses like couch and stuff, I'd cut it all back. So I've got a pretty much level surface to start with. And that shouldn't take long. And then I'm going to suppress it, and then I'm going to suppress it with cardboard because it's a natural product that decomposes. Not immediately, which is why we're interested in it, but it will decompose and it suppresses the weeds enough to get you started. So I'm going to get my cardboard, packaging boxes are brilliant, lay them over the plot, or lay them in over areas where I'm going to build a bed, and I'm going to top it with a layer of compost.
Fantastic. And well, like you just said, cardboard suppresses the weeds, and this does a similar thing to what we were saying about hoeing. It simply removes the weed's ability to be able to photosynthesis, which in 9 times out of 10 will kill the weed completely. It will just not allow it to come up, and then the cardboard is just thick enough and strong enough to be able to stop things from poking through. Of course, you can never stop good old dandelions and things like that. I mean, I've watched dandelions pop up through tarmac, as I'm sure everybody else has as well. So it's not 100% foolproof, But the point is that if you have a bed that you've done exactly what you've just described to, then you are starting off from a much, much more manageable situation. And you've got that lovely layer of compost on the top, which is really, really easy to run a hoe through.
I think it's worth reminding people that when you've done that, if you do that, you've created an environment right from the start that is going to benefit you as the gardener and also your garden from a natural perspective, because one, you haven't destroyed any existing soil structure, and you're not creating an environment for weeds to explode if you were to dig or turn that ground over right from the hoof. And I think for the majority of people like us who have allotments or vegetable patches, you really want to do things that are not only benefiting nature, but they are benefiting your time. And this is one of the best things you can do, because you're getting off on a really good start. It will not eliminate weeds. I think we need to make sure that people are completely aware that no dig and this kind of approach to gardening, even though it's hugely beneficial, you're never going to eliminate weeds completely. And so don't get the idea that this is going to be zero weeds, but it will reduce the amount of weeds, and it will mean you have a better way of managing them in terms of time and technique.
And also, I think if we're using the natural suppressant that is cardboard, and I mean, we're calling cardboard natural. The reason that we're calling it natural is because it's about as close to sort of a natural product that you can lay on the ground in a one big sheet as we can get. Obviously, it's a man-made thing, but it's made from natural products. And it's also something that we add to our compost anyway, to give it a little bit more structure for the compost. So cardboard, it's only going to add to the soil structure when it does break down. And it means that we don't have to use those awful shopboard weed suppressants, which I don't know if you've ever tried to dig those out of your garden or your allotment. Oh my goodness, they're awful.
There's two old really bad habits on allotments, and that really frustrate me, is they for a long time people thought that putting carpet down on their allotments to suppress weeds was a good thing. And what people have to remember is carpet is basically plastic, and it's got a lot of plastic fibers and components to it. And although they,
especially acrylic,
we know we've got a plastic pollution problem, so we know that it never goes. It just breaks down into really millions and bits of crap, basically. But also the weeds grow through it really quite easily, and they just get entangled in it. And if you've ever taken on an allotment that's got cardboard at some point being put down, it's an absolute nightmare.
It is a nightmare. And I think actually that it's almost more backbreaking trying to get rid of carpet from your allotment than it is trying to get rid of weeds. If you're doing the weeding in a sensible fashion, i.e. just cutting it back, sticking them on your compost heap, and then putting some cardboard on top of it, trying to eliminate carpet is awful. And then everything that's come out of the carpet over the years that it's been breaking down, even if it's not been there for that long, is then getting into your soil and in turn getting into your food and in turn getting into you. So it's just really, really not a very good idea. And then also there's that thin black weed suppressant. I'm not sure who invented this, but it doesn't really do a very good job for a start. And it's a similar situation. It's full of plastic. It breaks down slowly, but it does break down. And it gets all tangled up, and weeds just stick to it like you wouldn't believe. And then you have another real problem. It is absolutely backbreaking trying to get rid of this stuff.
I think so. I completely agree. I think it was, a lot of people will try and use that. I don't even know what you would call it. It's kind of like a thin suppressant. This kind of intertwined plastic fibers. It's not like a...
I think it's literally called weed matting.
It's matting, yeah. And you will notice that after not even a really long time, it starts to pull apart into threads. And you just don't want that on your garden, because it's, you know, the weeds will come through it, and it just breaks down and causes a terrible mess. Now, what I do want to say is there is possibly, I found useful, if you get some proper thick plastic sheeting for a temporary measure. So example, if you have something as big as an allotment, which we know are huge areas, you can sort of like, and this is really beneficial if you are someone like us who would be taken on a plot and have time restraints, you can't take on the huge area of an allotment in one go. What you need to do is combine two things. Well, this is what I've done, and this is what I would do if I took on a new plot. I would say cover half of the plot with some really good thick plastic and weigh it down. Not the matting stuff. You want stuff that is solid. You know, it's like a full sheet, not the stuff that's broken. You strim everything back and you cover, say, a percentage of your plot with this. And that will obviously kill off the weeds because it stops photosynthesis. But it's a temporary thing. You're not going to leave that down for longer than a few months or no longer than a year, at least anyway, I would say personally. And in the meantime, you start off with the cardboard and the compost, creating your beds. It makes it much more manageable. And the other benefit I just want to say is that you've just reminded me that when you create beds in the way that we've just described, by cardboard topped by compost, you can plant straight into it. And you are getting a number of things happening. You're creating that natural, really efficient system in your soil because you're not destroying it and you're not adding anything bad to it. You're getting the plant crop straight into it, so you're getting the really sort of like positive vibes from having plants growing and vegetables to harvest and enjoy in a really, really quick period of time. You're getting less weeds from the off. You're not having to battle weed upon weed again because you've managed to take hold of it. And the other thing about the big sheet of tarpaulin or plastic is that it gives you time to get to that point. And all you do then is this is what I've done on big plots that I've taken on, is I'd roll it back, create another two beds using the cardboard and compost while keeping the other bits subsided from weeds by the plastic. And it's management. So the only way I would probably use a non-natural sort of like weed suppressant is proper black plastic or something like that.
Ah, see, that's where you and I differ, Richard, and we might have a fight about this at some point. But I wouldn't use that simply because I think you're better off having soil that's covered in weeds. Now, obviously, allotment sites differ in as much as how they want you to manage the allotments. You're very much beholden to the council in that sense. So there is definitely a time and a place for it. If you are being made to keep very close management of it, that is when you can use it. Personally, I would opt not to and actually keep a patch of weeds because obviously then you've got the benefit of creating habitat, providing for your pollinators, and you've got that exchange of nutrients and carbon between the plants and soil. And that's what I really want to talk about here, because when we have bare soil, and we're talking about weeds still, the soil wants to have something to grow on it. Therefore, we're going to have a situation where weeds pop up almost as a sort of SOS measure for the soil. So when you haven't got the plants in the soil, and we talked about this in our fertilizer episode, you haven't got any carbon being pumped down from the leaves of the plants into the roots and therefore into the microorganisms in the soil, which means you haven't got anything feeding the fungi, which means you haven't got anything suppressing those nitrifying bacteria, which means that the plants are, the weeds are going to be able to grow, and they're going to be able to grow fast, and it's a way of the soil almost trying to heal itself. And then when you have those weeds popping up and photosynthesizing and pumping carbon down into the soil food web, then you start to get this buildup of fungi and things like that. And then you start to get those other plants arriving and being able to grow. And it's something that in ecology we call succession, because you get these, they're called pioneer plants, the first plants to arrive in an area. And then they sort of build the soil structure or whatever is needed to provide the habitat then for the other plants to grow. But what we can do as gardeners is we can either just leave the weeds until such a time that we're ready to use that area, or we can crop on it, and we can do constant cropping. And constant cropping is a really, really good way of suppressing the weeds. And I think we'll come to this slightly more later on in the year when we're talking about moving our gardens into winter. Because during the summer and right now where we are right now in June, it's really easy to have a full garden or a full allotment, because we all know that pretty much everything grows in June. It's great, isn't it? But if we can keep crops in the ground all year round, then we're going to be suppressing weeds and getting more crops out of our land as well.
I think you're absolutely right. And we're never going to have a fight about this. I completely agree with you. And I think what this comes down to is a lot about perception and old sort of like school sort of like processes. Like you said, I think for allotment holders, there is still a perception of seeing things that are wild as being not appropriate on allotment sites. And then when you get taken on,
untidy,
yes. And as we are learning and as we are changing perceptions into saying, look, this is natural, and there are, so like you just pointed out, so many important aspects of why weeds and wild areas are so important, I think there's a balance to be had. And I think, I mean, I was purely saying it in a form of a tool that people could use, particularly if they felt that they were in a position where they couldn't leave a wild area, because I think we should
totally.
I think we should be having wild areas, and I think how we you know create them is going to be different for a number of people, like you said, local authorities and rules and stuff. But absolutely, and I think what I want to reiterate is that anything like that kind of situation where I would use plastic, it always has to be a temporary situation, because if you are cutting off natural practice or natural processes from our gardens, you are losing such a massive benefit. So completely, we are always in sync.
And there's plenty of places that you can get old plastic sheeting as well, old tarpaulins and things like that. Marquee companies, for example, quite often keep these really, really thick sheets of plastic. So if you are after something like that, try and get it secondhand, and then try and pass it on to another person in need if you do need to use it, so that we're reducing our impact and we're reducing the amount of plastic that we're using.
Absolutely.
But I've got a really top tip. So first of all, if you've got brambles, hurrah, because you've got blackberries.
Yeah,
freebies. So don't think of them as brambles. Think of them as blackberries, and that's a massive win. Hit me up if you want a really good blackberry jam recipe. And if you've got a patch of grass and weeds in the grass, my top tip would be to put something that closely resembles some sort of demarcation around it. Maybe a piece of string or a bit of bunting or something. Make it look pretty. Put a sign that says wildflower meadow and walk away. And I guarantee you, people won't whinge about it.
That's really useful. I mean, it goes back to the point we said at the beginning, is that weeds, so many of them are absolutely beautiful as well. Once they come into flower, there's some really, really pretty ones, and no one's going to complain about that in the summer, in June, when they're all burst into flower and they look absolutely incredible.
Exactly. And if you want it to really take it to the next level, there's a plant called the Meadow Maker. It's actually called Yellow Rattle, and you can get the seeds online. And if you distribute seeds of Yellow Rattle into an area of grass, what it does is the roots of the Yellow Rattle actually helps suppress grass, which creates spaces in the grass so that the wildflowers can come in. So if you've got an area that's going to be laid to weed, basically, for a little bit longer, then consider putting some Yellow Rattle seeds in there and seeing whether you can actually turn it into a bit of a meadow. It's beautiful. It's well worth your while. But let's move on from that a little bit, because I want to know, Richard, this is a completely different tack. What is your favourite kind of hoe?
Oh, I love it when we have this question, because it's mainly just me and you having this question.
I'm pretending like I don't already know what your favourite kind of hoe is.
You know, I've had my life changed. You know, it's just in recent weeks where I have now what is called an oscillating hoe. That sounds very, very technical, but it's really not.
That's not what my mind went with, but okay.
So, an oscillating hoe is basically a, it's like, I don't know, how would you even describe an oscillating hoe?
It's a hoe with movable parts.
Yes, but the movable part is what makes it so bloody brilliant, in the sense that an oscillating hoe is basically, it's a long stick with a bit of metal that's sharp on both sides, and it's on like a little pivot, isn't it? So when you yeah. run it across the top of a bed, you can go backwards and forwards, and both sides of it have a sharp edge. And I absolutely love it. It generally has. So the other alternative type of hoe, or one of the other hoes, and this is one that most people have, is called a Dutch hoe. And I think people will know what a Dutch hoe is. It's basically, again, a long stick with a bit of metal that's kind of shaped in a bit of a triangle with a sharp edge on the front edge. And you have to push that across the bed. And the cutting edge is only on the front edge, so you have to push it. Now, why I love the oscillating hoe is because of it's got this movement which allows you to cut both ways, forward and back. It speeds up the process so much. And like going back to the point about when I try and keep on top of my mare's tail, or hoe in the beds every time I go down, that is a game changer for me. It means I can get around all of the beds very, very quickly. And yeah, I love it. I love my hoe.
Oh dear, I wish you could have seen the look on his face then. He went all misty-eyed thinking about this hoe. I have to say that I am the proud owner of an oscillating hoe as well. And it really is a very, very good piece of kit.
You love it, don't you?
I do love it. I'm not perhaps going to wax lyrical about it quite so much as you are, Richard, but still. But I think when it comes to hoes, it's not one size fits all, is it? Because there are several different sort of types of hoe. For a start, there are digging hoes, and those are the ones that actually dig up the surface. They're for tilling the surface. So they get the top couple of inches of soil and they sort of turn it over a little bit. And then you've got draw hoes, which you can have ones that are forked or the ones that lift up the surface. And everybody will know these as just sort of, they've got a flat piece of metal on the end. And you can just pull them across the surface. But they dig, and they do slightly dig into that top bit of soil structure. And then we've got reciprocating hoes, and those are the ones with the movable parts. So they're absolutely brilliant. And that's the oscillating hoe that we just talked about. There are a couple of different types as well. And there's the flat hoes, and that's a Dutch hoe is a flat hoe. So that's one with a piece of metal that just runs very, very, very close to the surface of the soil. And then there's sweeping hoes, which are kind of for, well, literally just for sweeping the surface of the soil. But the most, apparently, the most sold type of hoe is a draw hoe. And they are by far the most difficult to use and the least useful.
I agree. I don't think I've ever used a draw. I don't think I've ever used a draw hoe. I know what a draw hoe is, but one, I think, again, this is about a change in practice for so many people, that there's just no need for a draw hoe when you garden using sort of like no dig and you're trying to maintain the soil structure, because they are quite... Well, you can imagine, in a traditional sense, that's how you would plant potatoes. You know, you'd draw a big divot in the soil and or whatever.
I mean, something like a digging hoe or a draw hoe. But the point that I'm trying to make by sort of saying that there are quite a few different types is that we're saying that hoeing is really easy. It's a really easy way of weed management, and that it doesn't affect the soil, but it really does depend on the type of hoe that you're using. And something like a Dutch hoe or an oscillating hoe is a very easy, lightweight, not backbreaking way of hoeing out weeds. And that's exactly what they're designed for. Whereas some of the other hoes are not designed necessarily for weed control. So be a little bit mindful of this if you are going to purchase yourself a hoe with all the best intentions of never ever using a weed suppressant again, because I don't want you to sort of come into this and think, oh, what are they talking about? This is absolutely awful.
I want to say one other thing. So I've got a Dutch hoe and an oscillating hoe. The oscillating one is the one that I'm in love with and I tend to use mostly on my beds. But going back to the point we said about not using any kind of weed suppressant, even on your paths. So what I do is I don't use any suppressant. I use wood chips. That luckily we have a really useful free piles of wood chips given to us from local tree surgeons. Definitely look into that for starters. If you've got them in your local area, it's a brilliant free resource, and you're reusing wood that's come from chopped down trees. Lay them on my path. Now, what I use my Dutch hoe for is actually to maintain the weeds that come up through the wood chip path. And I find the Dutch hoe is perfect for this because it's not as, because the oscillating hoe's got moving parts, it gets sort of like the wood chips, it just doesn't work. But the Dutch hoe, if you keep it sharp, any sort of perennial weeds or any weeds that pop up in the wood chips, you can use your Dutch hoe on the wood chip paths. I do it quite regularly as well, run the edges of the beds where the weeds start to poke up and through. Just run your Dutch hoe across the wood chip paths. It's brilliant.
So there we have it. That's Richard and Becky's hoe rundown. The hoe down.
There's a hoe down.
So let's take a slightly different tack again, and we've defined weeds, haven't we? And we've talked about our sort of favourite way of managing our weeds. But there are some plants that I feel like we ought to just give them a little mention, and those are the not really weeds. So we've got things like things that act or behave in the way that weeds behave, but we actively try and grow them.
I think these are ones that we probably call as invasive, aren't they? So they're not weeds in the sense that you don't want them out of your garden, because these are the kind of things you want in your garden, but they can be quite invasive.
Yeah, and it's the things that make lots and lots and lots of seeds. So in my garden, it would be borage, tree spinach, amaranth, and sorrel as well, and there are a few more. Mint doesn't make seeds, but spreads like wildfire.
Anyone who wants to grow mint, if you can't, you definitely want to. It's definitely the kind of herb that you want to pen into a pot or some kind of container that you've sunk in the ground, because man, that goes crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I always say to people when they're talking about trying to contain mint, you can try, but you will not succeed. It's basically the best way of putting that. If you want to contain it, you really do have to grow it just in a pot by itself. Don't dig it into the ground or anything. Just stand it on the patio, let it enjoy itself. I actually had in my old garden, an old bomb shelter, which I rendered and made it look all pretty and turned it into a bed and just stuck a whole bunch of mint in there. And I had loads of different varieties. I had chocolate mint, I had apple mint, strawberry mint, peppermint, pineapple mint, all these wonderful mints, and just thought, I'm just going to put them all into this bed together and let them duke it out. And if they can get out of a bomb shelter, then fair play to them.
I actually knew someone who had mint in their garden, and it grew into their lawn, which I kind of love anyway, but they actually realized how refreshing it was when they mowed their lawn. it was like sniffing a tube of toothpaste.
Kind of love that, actually. I mean, what a great idea.
It's brilliant.
I mean, mint's actually really, really useful, isn't it? It does grow like a weed, but again, it has some really fantastic uses, and not just as a herb. Things like, if you plant mint right next to your back door or front door, it stops spiders from coming in, things like that, because it's a really strong smelling thing. So it is fantastic, but you can try and contain it, but good luck to you. But there are also other things like Welsh onions, three-cornered leek.
Sorrel.
Yeah, sorrel. So there's lots of
things like the Welsh onions and the three-cornered, they're kind of perennial plants, but they do spread very easily. Again, I know some people who've got Welsh onions on the allotment, and they keep having to cut them back and really sort of like maintain them quite often. They're a great crop to have, and I think people should be encouraged to have more perennial stuff growing, but it's just to be aware of them that, like you said, they're not weeds. I suppose they're not weeds because we don't define them as weeds, but we find them useful in the sense, but act in a very similar same way. Yeah.
Generally speaking, if you can buy a seed packet full of them, then we wouldn't define them as weeds, would we? But when they come into our garden and you can't get rid of them, then they start to feel more and more like weeds, don't they? One of my biggest weeds, in inverted commas, in the polytunnel is tomatoes.
Yes. Those seeds are just...
They come up like wildflowers.
They are. Those seeds are invincible.
Yeah, they really are. And there was obviously a few that had fallen because they'd come up in patches. Massive, great big clumps of tomatoes. And I think just today I must have removed probably 400 tomato plants from my tomato bed, which sounds ridiculous. But they are my worst weed.
I find them in my compost bin. Like if you put tomatoes that maybe from, you know, that you scrape into your compost bin or something, again, the seeds will just, they don't seem to compost. So you can, you think you've got some lovely compost and you spread it over your beds, and as soon as the spring arrives, you've got tomato seeds popping up everywhere.
That's it. But the really handy thing about that is that if you have self-sown tomatoes, they act as a really nifty little indicator as to when the tomatoes are ready to be sown. And so if you've got self-sown tomatoes coming up in your polytunnel, you can bet your bottom dollar that that polytunnel is now going to be safe to grow tomatoes in, because they do not germinate unless it's safe, and they can predict the weather far better than any Met Office can.
bonus. So we've talked about weeds, what they are and what makes them such great competitors and such a nuisance in our gardens.
We talked about the fact that it's in the interest of the soil to produce weeds because it wants to re-establish the system of reciprocity between the plants and the soil food web and that exchange of nutrients and carbon that takes place.
And as gardeners, we can exacerbate the problem of weeds simply by disturbing the soil and also by feeding with liquid fertilizers, simply because you're adding the form of nitrogen that weeds thrive on.
So not digging and not using fertilizers is in itself a form of weed control.
But we're always going to need to manage weeds in some way, regardless of how good our soils are. And for that, we recommend a good old-fashioned hoe.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another one. If you did enjoy, we'd love it if you would subscribe. We'll see you again soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.